From KDNK Community Access Radio in Carbondale, Colorado, in the United States, this is program number 68 of the Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. When blind people go places, we don't experience them like our sighted friends. We don't see beautiful mountains or romantic sunsets. The goal of this program is to identify and even create experiences that are more meaningful for us and for our sighted traveling companions. Frequently, as people lose their eyesight, they become more and more isolated. The Tactile Traveler hopes to empower people not only to go literally around the world, but around the block to new experiences in their lives. Blind ranges from people who are visually impaired, and glasses and contact lenses no longer allow them to lead a normal life, to people like me, who are totally blind, to sighted parents who have a blind child, blind parents who have sighted children, blind parents with blind children, and people of all ages, interests, and physical abilities. On today's program, Echolocation, how blind and visually impaired people can visualize their surroundings and enjoy them. There's a way for people who are totally blind, even if they were born blind and have never experienced vision, to visualize what's around them. It's echolocation. The first thing most of us think of when we hear the term echolocation is bats, which use echolocation to meet many of their needs for a happy bat life. Most of us who are blind or visually impaired can also use echolocation to lead a richer life. When Daniel Kish was about 18 months old, he had his second eye removed because of cancer. When people came into his hospital room, he had climbed out of his crib and was crawling along the floor, making clicking sounds with his tongue and avoiding obstacles. Daniel was fortunate because his parents encouraged his independence, and he has used his clicking sounds to navigate his way through life. When he became an adult, he applied his independence skills to help other visually impaired and blind people to become independent. Using his echolocation skills while teaching orientation and mobility, which is how to use white canes and guide dogs.
I am the first totally blind person known to become a certified orientation and mobility specialist. So that happened late 96, early 97. So I became a certified orientation and mobility specialist at that time. Blind people have been mentoring other blind people probably for as long as there has been blind people throughout human history. How many of them echolocated, we don't know. But in terms of what we do know, and in terms of what has been documented, I seem to be the first and perhaps the most well-known person to have documented the process, to have codified the process, to have publicized the process. And I don't mean publicizing in the written form or the written word, but publicizing in the media, publicizing in the press. My first public article to take interest in the process would have occurred in the early 1990s. And it's just proceeded from there.
So far, Daniel has taught about 30,000 people how to echolocate individually, in groups, and in workshops. The one person he hasn't been able to teach echolocation to successfully so far is me, because of my hearing loss. Hearing aids are designed to understand speech, which is a different sound range from returning clicks. His other clients who wear hearing aids have been able to have their hearing aids adjusted to hear both voices and clicks using the voice range. I'm working with my hearing aid provider to see if they can write software that will hear both voice and the click ranges at the same time. I'm motivated because I did get echolocation to work for me for about 3 seconds. I was clicking away in my living room, and it created an image for me that was amazing. I could see my sloping ceiling. I could tell where the skylight was and tell where the walls came together in the corner of the room. When people with normal vision look at something, light reflects off the object to their eyes, which converts the light signal to an image in their brain, which is vision. Sounds also reflect or bounce off objects, which can send signals to the same part of the brain, creating images. But that doesn't happen automatically. You have to create that sound, usually a tongue click, which sounds something like this. There are other ways to generate the sound, like clapping your hands, snapping your fingers, or using a clicker.
There are two kinds of echolocation. There's passive and active echolocation. Passive echolocation refers to the use of sounds that happen to occur, that chance to occur in the environment, sounds that incidentally occur in the environment. You have no control over what they are, when they happen, where they happen, for how long they happen, how far away from you they are, whether or not they are directed in a way that's useful or contain indeed any characteristics that are useful. So the images that result from passive echolocation tend to be fleeting. They tend to be vague. They tend to be blurred. I won't say they're not useful. Any information is useful, but they don't fall under the control of the listener. The more control one has over the signals that can then reflect from surfaces, the more active one is in the process. So at the sheer opposite end of the spectrum, you have actively produced signals. They could be hand clickers. They could be tongue clicks. They could be finger snaps, conceivably. But the idea is that you then assume control over how those signals are directed or focused, when they occur, what characteristics will be present in the signal, how consistent is the signal, how often the signal is repeated, the volume of the signal, etc. So those kinds of characteristics under one's control allow for the creation of the kind of image you want when you want it. And then everything in between, you can talk about footsteps, you can talk about cane taps, the keys jangling in your pocket or whatever. Those are sounds that one can make on one's person or from one's person, but they do not allow for the same, and they have their uses, but they do not allow for the same level of control that an actively produced signal can or does.
You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. Now, back to our story on echolocation. Daniel says you don't just use echolocation to create the image.
Well, nothing occurs in a vacuum. Everything we are and everything we do as human beings is done in context, and echolocation is no different. So echolocation is something that is taught and used in the context or as part of a constellation of other characteristics that make up our personhood. So what we hear, what we touch, what we think, what we feel, what we ideate, all of those things feed into and then allow us to create or construct an image. An image is a composite of everything we sense, everything we perceive, everything we experience, all of our ideas, all of those things converge to create an image. And echolocation is one of those elements that lends itself to enhancing that image, to allow that image to vibrate with life and with understanding.
Daniel says echolocation isn't complicated, but getting people to accept and even expect blind people to use it can be.
That's not hard. There are four elements. There's the physical science, the physics of echolocation, very straightforward, very easy to understand, very easy to grasp. There's the perceptual system. That's harder, harder stuff. It's harder to understand how the perceptual system of a human can actually make use of echolocation data, because frankly, they are quite sparse compared to, say, vision, very low res. So how the human brain can make use of it, can even capture that data, is a lot of question marks over that. So that there's a lot of study to that. But with as much as we don't know, there's plenty that we do know. The third element would be the behavior. How do humans behave? What strategies do humans use behaviorally to make echolocation most effective, most efficient, most safe? And then the fourth is the instructional process. How can we facilitate the learning of echolocation? How can we impart that skill to others? And if I were to name a fifth piece, it would be the sociocultural piece, the society's readiness to both support and accept the process. All bats, all echolocating species of bats learn to echolocate. You pretty much don't have, it's not really a choice. It's not like, I'll learn it or not learn it. What difference does it really make? Pretty much every single bat does learn echolocation. And if it doesn't, it perishes, right? Because it can't compete with all of the 99.99999% of their compatriots who can echolocate. So bats learn to echolocate. Why? Because it's useful. Because it supports their life and livelihood. Because it supports their freedom, their personal agency. Well, it does that for blind humans too, right? I mean, a blind human stands to reap many of the same benefits that bats enjoy if that blind human learns to echolocate. But somehow, some way, the majority, the vast majority of blind humans do not develop highly proficient capacity to echolocate, even though its utility is obvious and very well documented. So why is that? Well, there are lots of reasons for that, but a big reason is that we do not live in a society that encourages it, that supports it, that expects it, and indeed in many ways may suppress or repress the development of such a skill.
You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. Now, back to our story on echolocation. Echolocation won't replace sight, but what it will do is amazing.
Echolocation doesn't take the place of a long white cane. It doesn't do ground level features or items very well. The closer to the ground you get, the harder it is to detect things. There are certain things you can detect at ground level, and lots of things you can't. Drop-offs are one of the things you can't detect using echolocation. It certainly doesn't detect color. It's not exactly a replacement for vision. There are things that echolocation doesn't do that vision can do. It doesn't detect color. It doesn't detect visual contrast. So you can't read signs. You might be able to tell the signs are there using echolocation, but you can't read them. While you can detect large reflective objects at distances of dozens or even hundreds of meters, you can't detect things beyond hundreds of meters for the most part.
You don't just use echolocation to understand your surroundings. I spent 6 days with Daniel. Most people can learn to echolocate in 3. Much of that was spent in a park. Daniel would say, there are three people walking towards us, an adult and two children. He experienced them as three blobs, a big blob, the adult, and two small blobs, the children. He could tell they were people by using audio cues. He could hear them talking to each other. Footsteps would be another audio cue. Daniel can visualize where the sidewalk is and what's next to it, like grass or buildings. He can even tell what's parked at the curb.
Well, those are easy. They're large. They're big. They're not subtle. So you can tell the general shape. Is it boxy? Is it large, like the large mass? Then it's probably a bus or a large truck. If it's high in the middle and kind of lower at both ends, it's probably a sedan of some kind. If it's relatively small, then it's a compact of some kind. If it's relatively large, then it's who knows. An SUV or a Jeep would look more blocky, and it would be higher, taller. You can often tell the front versus the back of a car because the back of a car is usually higher and it's usually shorter than the hood or bonnet of a car is usually longer and lower. Those kinds of things.
Daniel says echolocation doesn't replace the need for white canes.
You need the ability to read your terrain. Echolocation does not read terrain very well. It will not read that there's a hole in the ground. It will not read that the sidewalk in front of you is broken up. It will not read that someone's left their bicycle on its side in the middle of the sidewalk. Things like that are just hard or impossible to detect. You won't detect a stairs going down. If you're hiking, you won't detect ruts in the trail. You won't detect rocky terrain. You won't detect that there's a slope that's descending quickly, or a cliff or something like that, or a hole in the ground, right? So you use your cane for that. You can miss things with echolocation. I mean, you can miss things. You can misread things. You can misidentify things. You can just fail to detect certain things. And so your cane, being a haptic, concrete, tangible, palpable, physical instrument, will generally detect those things that you either miss or those things that are difficult or impossible to detect reliably.
Daniel says echolocation makes working with a guide dog a totally different experience.
Proficient echolocation is hugely useful, especially to guide dog users. One of a guide dog's primary duties, responsibilities, is to keep you out of physical contact with your environment. Right? You're not supposed to make bodily contact with your environment with a dog. A dog's supposed to look around and kind of keep you from making physical or bodily contact with the environment. Now, for many blind people, that's quite disconcerting because we use the physical environment to facilitate our sense of where we are and to facilitate our connection with and interaction with the environment. So in a way, in that sense, a guide dog kind of puts us at odds with the environment because now we're isolated from the environment. We don't have the same level or control over our physical contact with the environment. So what does echolocation do? It helps to restore that connection with the environment, that contact with the environment. I know that I'm passing light posts. I know I'm passing trees. I know we're supposed to turn at the third light post. I know what the landscape looks like around me. I know what kind of space we're passing through as we pass through it. And I can use that information to maintain or improve or enhance my personal agency over my dog.
The echolocation click is made by snapping your tongue on the roof of your mouth where the flat area begins to rise. Here is Daniel teaching me how to click.
So that's the sort of click that you're leaning toward.
Okay, could you do a bunch of them?
So that's sort of a medium volume, a medium intensity click. That's probably the quietest click that you should be making, would be my guess. So, You might have to click that loudly to be able to get impressions of images, reliable impressions of images of surfaces in your surroundings to be able to create images for yourself. So that's my guess. That's the kind of click that you're heading toward now.
The first time I interviewed Daniel was on the phone while he was walking down a street. I didn't even notice when he was clicking while we were carrying on a conversation. Daniel says people can learn echolocation at any age.
My saying is the earlier the easier, but it's never too late. So yes, I prefer, if possible, to work with students as young as possible. I do cane training. I do the preliminaries of echolocation training with babies, with infants, with toddlers. It doesn't really matter. But a lot of that is family training as well. So whenever I work with a young person, I'm also working with their family and with all of those people who have any influence in that young person's life. It's a constellation, a village, if you will, of learning, of training, of support in the development of that young person, developing perception. I call it perceptual development, developing perception, developing skills, developing personhood, strength of character, personal agency, self-determination. All of that is supported by and feeds from our family and community context.
Some people are reluctant to use echolocation because they feel it will draw attention to themselves and their blindness. Daniel says since you only click loud enough for your environment, most people won't even realize you're clicking. And he says as more people echolocate, society will expect blind people to use it, like they use white canes. Daniel Kish's email address is daniel-kish@worldaccessfortheblind.org. That's daniel-kish@worldaccessfortheblind.org. Kish is spelled K-I-S-H. You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg.
Okay, please step on the scale. The weight is 156.5.
Why, it's my talking scale, reminding us that we'd like you to weigh in on how we're doing. Please let us know by sending an email to thetactiletraveler@gmail.com. We spell traveler the American way with one L. We'd also like to hear your story ideas from all over the world. Please send us an email with story ideas in the subject line to thetactiletraveler@gmail.com. Transcripts of this program are available for our deaf listeners by searching The Tactile Traveler in any search engine. This program is also being broadcast on Aftersight, formerly the Audio Information Network of Colorado, and audio information networks in additional states. It's also available by typing The Tactile Traveler into any search engine, and available wherever you get podcasts, and by asking your smart speaker to play the podcast, The Tactile Traveler. We'd like to thank the following people and organizations that made today's program possible. Be My Eyes, Microsoft Accessibility Tech Support, Apple Accessibility Tech Support, Pat Conroe, Lorraine Hutchinson, Debbie O'Leary, Sarah Williams, Sophia Williams, Megan Passmore, Kaylee Romero, Evan Starnes, and Wally Burley. This has been the Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low-vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. This is a production of KDNK Community Access Radio, Carbondale, Colorado.